Well, what do you think about Core Jam? Is that evolutionary?
I am most bullish on a regenesis.
Gav, even way back in the Ethereum days, has always been trying to build this world computer.
How do you think governance is going?
Oh, man.
The launch team wishes you good luck and Godspeed.
Space Monkeys blasting off with Sean Tabrizi. He's a core developer of Polkadot, part of the Fellowship, and a friend of the channel here to help us navigate the future of Polkadot. Sean, thank you so much for coming back on the show. And
thanks for having
back.
Me. Yeah, man. How do you feel? I mean, we were in Thailand for how long? You've been here now?
Since Friday.
Friday, yeah. I mean, it's been a lot, but busy, right?
Holy, yeah, no doubt. And the whole shape of the future is different.
Exactly. Yeah. I haven't been to a conference in a little while, but it feels so great to just be surrounded by like all the, you know, friends and also meeting new people and engineers and building. I mean, it's really especially Sub-Zero specifically, you know, this builder conference, developer conference. It reminds me like how awesome it is to be a developer pushing forward these like blockchain technology and trying to change the world. It's great.
Any developers or any presentations come to mind?
I saw a lot of existing teams show demos of like latest cutting edge stuff. Like, so I mean, I saw, for example, like Light client stuff, wallet stuff, better integration. I mean, I think my favorite presentation from this conference was the Talisman team.
Talisman team,
they were showing off a suite of products. Again, nothing I would say like revolutionary, but evolutionary. Like they are really harnessing the power and of Light clients and small dots and integrating that deeply into their stuff. So that, again, the mission and the story they're telling is that it doesn't make sense that we're building all this decentralized tech stack if the user and the user's a wallet that is centralized, right?
Right.
So they really showed how easy and seamless and amazing the UX you can build is, still taking advantage of these technologies. And I love it because, you know, we spend so much time and effort building technologies like Smalldot, building Polkadot to be like clients, to support like clients.
Sure, yeah.
And finally, for a team out there to actually use it in the way we intended, that's the best.
It's amazing. Decentralization further up the stack is so key. I always say that Polkadot is, especially with OpenGov, kind of this like this unstoppable organization of humans.
Yeah.
I know we're
not
using unstoppable anymore, but you know, I think it's a little scary to maybe states just to realize like, well, this thing can't be stopped.
I mean, I like the word unstoppable. I think resilient is the kind of more friendly term, but unstoppable is the right word because the truth is that
try
you know,
to stop it.
Yeah, I mean, it's what we want is we want that if parity went away, if everything went bad, if government said like we don't want you to build this, but we know this is a need of the people, that it could still happen. And I think that's really powerful. And I think the important aspect of unstoppable is that that unstoppable is a technology, but it is guided by society, right?
Mm-hmm.
That there is a way to stop what we're building here is by people saying, I don't want to help contribute to it.
But as long as there's someone
people
out giving
there.
Up, you mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like, if there's no one who's actually contributing or building towards it, it will be stopped.
Yeah, yeah.
But as long as you have someone or a group of people who have a mission, a value, you know, value this technology, I think, you know, we have built a technology which will allow them to continue to build.
One of the themes of this conference and this conversation, I think, was really led by Pierre, the VP of engineering at Parity. This was the idea of trade-offs, especially maybe Parity of the past, you know, 50 plus upgrades to Polkadot, moving fast, breaking things even on Polkadot. Here we have Pierre come along from Google.
Yeah.
And he's product focused. He wants stable environments so people can actually build things and we can get adopters. What's your take on that?
So a little historical fact on me. So I joined Parity actually doing like documentation and like kind of like DevEx at the beginning, right?
Okay.
I was myself so frustrated maintaining docs that of a breaking product that, you know, I was spending more time just fixing the docs than actually writing new ones.
Sure.
So this was actually how I transitioned to being an engineer because I was kind of like complaining to Gav, like, this, I can't do this anymore. He's like, okay, help us build the right product, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was just telling Gav, I'm so fed up, you know, like having to maintain, like just trying to keep things up to date, like start working on the actual software, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So actually building. So I totally resonate with this problem.
Yeah.
The truth is I was a little bit shielded from it during most of my engineering time because then, you know, I was actually working at the substrate level. I was making some of the breaking changes. So I'm sorry to everyone out there.
Absolutely,
I agree. I mean, we need to be able to make Polkadot, the SDK, way more consistent for developers so that they can actually, you know, build products that they can maintain and launch and feel comfortable with, right?
Sure.
And I think we're at the right time. Again, Pierre is coming in at the right time to do that mission because Polkadot more than ever has been stable. I think if you actually talk to any developer at this conference, what it was like 3 years ago versus what it's like today, totally different story. Now, there are some products which are still very aggressively variable. For example, XEM.
Sure,
there was a lot of complaints recently about XEM having some breaking changes. But you have to remember, like, in terms of the life cycle of where XEM is, it's 2-3 years behind where Polkadot or Substrate was, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
In this case, I just think it's a matter of time. But one of the best things about, you know, working at Parity, and I guess the hard things about building things that Parity builds, is that Parity is very practical. We want to be lean. We want to ship things. And then, you know, if things were mistakes, you know, build the better product, right? Like, mm-hmm. make improvements.
Mm.
We try to avoid breaking things as much as possible, but also sometimes we realize that, you know, what we thought would be a good initial solution and what we think is the best final solution requires a break. And, you know, that's just the nature of software. But can we do better? Absolutely. And I think that Pierre is a great person to push that forward.
Good stuff. Did you have any opinions on, we had a big presentation on Snowbridge. This is a long-awaited product.
Right.
What did you think about that?
You know, I would say I'm not a super expert of the bridge space.
I think
let's start with do we need it? Absolutely. It's so heartbreaking when the only time that blockchains get in mainstream news is for them to report when a bridge is hacked.
That has
got to be the like most negative feeling ever, right?
That
my parents message me not when cool things are happening, it's this hack, did it affect you or whatever, right? So having a secure bridge to other ecosystems, super important. I worry that people, you know, like, I'm very hot about the technology. And like, it takes a lot of work to make this happen. I mean, Parity has and Polkadot has a lot of great engineers, and it still took how long, right?
Yeah.
The technology is amazing. It's really great.
Sure.
But does everyone respect that? Does everyone want that? I mean, it feels like in the modern day, there's so many compromises around just getting something out there and making, again, superficial numbers go up.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, so I want to see when it's out there, who will actually appreciate what it provides, like the true, like, you know, cryptographic security that provides.
Then
I want to see, I want to see be used. I want to be successful, right?
Anything you're seeing out there, products being built on Polkadot that are interesting to you right now?
Yeah, I mean, I just got a message from the Nova team. Did you see this? I don't know, like...
The Telenova?
Yeah. Am I allowed to talk about that? I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's live. Yeah.
Okay, sure, it's live. So, I mean, he literally on Telegram just sent me some KSM.
So
and,
cool.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, dude, I didn't...
Dude, wait until you can send Polkadot native stables.
Exactly,
you
right?
You know what I mean? The business you could do.
But, I mean, in the background, I mean, it was just a couple clicks. I mean, that's really great. And obviously, Telegram probably did a lot of work for that, too. But, Nova team is, I mean, way ahead of their time in terms of, like, building great tech.
Crushing it, yeah.
Yeah. Beyond that, I mean, I think developer tooling has been getting a lot better. I mean, something that wasn't represented here, but that I really liked was Chopsticks, this thing that Akala team is doing, right?
Yeah,
and also this, it just manifested itself into the Polkadot.js apps, right? The developer console. You have this like fork me, right?
Yeah, I saw that. Now, yeah.
I agree that maybe it's not the right placement for the button. But I mean, holy shit, I don't think people understand that how cool that button is. I mean, if I put that button on a website, I would have made it like a pop-up thing, like click me just to see what's going on type thing. So
cool.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Nice stuff. So Pierre's talking about stable builds. Although we are updating things, core time is on the way.
Yeah.
Alaska scaling is not far behind.
Things are moving fast. And this is a big part of evolutionary versus revolutionary, right?
Okay.
If we didn't design the systems to be, you know, with things like elastic scaling in mind, having this idea of like, you know, these cores, which are quite general, it would have taken many years to implement it. We have to basically break everyone again.
Yeah.
But because we really have a long-term vision in mind, we've always had this kind of scaling in mind, but we needed a good platform to start with, right? A product to launch, which was Parachains V1, right? That's why we've been able to launch these things so quickly, because it's really just an evolution of the existing tech stack. And again, we're doing it in ways that are not breaking. It's always backwards compatible, which is really great, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what do you think about CoreJam? Is that evolutionary or is that revolutionary?
I think it is revolutionary for our ecosystem, but evolutionary in terms of the Polkadot technology stack.
All right.
That makes sense?
Nice distinction. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I think we need to talk about what's the same and what's different, right? What has changed?
Sure.
The same is the mission has been the same. I think that Gav, even way back in the Ethereum days, has always been trying to build this world computer, trying to like have a platform where if you want to launch a Web3 application, and what I mean by Web3 is it has the properties of being resilient, decentralized, you know, censorship resistant, that you can do that. You do not have to literally launch a brand new blockchain, set up a bunch of nodes, have a whole new economics, that somewhere out there is a platform which is flexible enough and scalable enough for you to actually use it to host your application. Hmm. Now, Ethereum was that first V1 of that, and Polkadot has always been the extension of that.
Sure.
And how's Polkadot, you know, iterated from the Ethereum days? It uses sharding, right?
Yeah.
And parallelization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is still the base layer. Like, the technology that CoreJam is providing is still scaling blockchains and this Web3 and block space all through sharding and scaling. But it's basically trying to lower the opinions and make things more general and flexible for what kinds of ways you can use that computer.
Yeah.
So the current Parachain V1 model, you have these cores, that's the same. But each core only can run one application,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
An iteration of that in CoreJam, as we're seeing, and with Agile CoreTime, all this kind of stuff, all these things come together, is that, hey, we have these cores, they can do a bunch of work. Why only one person can use it? We can actually share it. And best is that, you know, the resources needed for an app are different. One application may need a lot of compute. One application might need more like that availability.
Sure.
One application might need more storage.
Sure.
And so we can actually take advantage of different pieces of the core and pair people together so they take advantage of the full resources available, right?
Mm.
We want that ultimately there is no wasted space on this chain, right? And I think that CoreJam, CoreTime are all pieces of making it accessible and flexible to get that, you know, general blockchain block space, right?
Well put. Okay, so yeah. What's different?
I think parachain, the word parachain, yeah, is a term going to extinction.
Good.
The idea of there being, again, another of the single blockchain running on a single core, whatever, it's gonna be much more muddled. We're gonna be running applications. Applications can be parachains. That's obviously a subset of it.
Yeah.
But applications be much more flexible than that. I think Gavin hinted towards some of these ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he made the comment that basically any function with a main entry point could run on the system.
Sure.
You may not even need to be a blockchain itself. You may not even need to have a, you know, chain of blocks with a root hash and all this kind of stuff. You could be an application running just on Polkadot in the data availability layer, like in the memory, right?
Sure.
And that could be like basically ephemeral. You know, I really actually don't even have in my head exact vision for how all the ways it can be used, but certainly the big change here is stepping back and saying, how can we lower the assumptions about what applications run?
Do you have any example of an application outside of the parachain architecture that you could imagine running on this?
This might not be the main focus of CoreJam itself.
No, I understand, yeah.
As a part of splitting up the different block space, we know that right now, for example, Celestia is really hot because it is trying to provide data availability for all these roll-up solutions.
Yeah.
Polkadot already has a ton of data availability there. And
yeah.
I mean, I think arguably we have a very strong technology stack that's competitive with other, you know, single solution providers.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason that roll-up solutions couldn't use the data availability of Polkadot for the exact same purposes, right?
Yeah, okay.
So that is this example where, you know, you're using the Polkadot technology stack, you're using this, you know, all of our validators, but not necessarily building a parachain. You're actually just gonna roll up.
Right.
Now, if I'm thinking, putting on my like developer experience hat on, and I'm thinking, okay, what kind of like basic hello world apps can I create which aren't parachains,
yeah,
for people to build on?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about something like a basic counter. Like imagine, like I'm trying to think, like what's the small, like today, the smallest program you can write, you should launch on Polkadot. It's like basically like a minimal parachain. You take a substrate node template, you fork it, you launch it onto that. What if I could write a program, which is just a few lines of code, like maybe just like 10, which it basically, it has no low-level storage, it has no collators, it's not a blockchain. It is a counter application. It has two functions, add one, minus one.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And anyone can call it. You can still have transactions from any user.
Yeah.
And the current counter is actually stored in the DA layer, right?
Mm.
So as long as someone calls it every 24 hours before the DA layer gets cleaned up,
yeah, yeah,
that counter will be persisted, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then you can imagine basically like you have this application which is just running without needing to provide any other resources than just putting an application on the blockchain. I mean, that's very similar to like what a smart contract is, except Polkadot is not promising you long-term storage, which is already a big scaling problem for blockchains.
Mm.
But if you don't need that, if you're building an ephemeral application, like a simple counter or like a Hello World app, you know, that's great. You don't need it. You don't have to pay for it. We just provide an alternative solution. So I think that's the kind of exciting things I would love to see come out once the technology is there, that we actually show people how easy it is to build this really simple hello world, you know?
Did you say in there that Polkadot's not promising to offer long-term storage?
Well, that's part of the scalability, right? So Polkadot itself has its own storage. It has validators running the relay chain. But the way that it can scale is by sharding the data. I mean, a parachain is responsible for holding its own data, right? That's what collators are doing, right? Mm-hmm. We just store the root hash, which ensures that we can cryptographically prove that the data being provided to us matches what we have come to consensus over, right?
Yeah.
But that, I mean, that the truth is, if Polkadot was trying to provide long-term storage to everyone, we would never scale. Now, there are ways to publish data to Polkadot for long-term storage. I think that pushing it into the relay chain itself, we don't want to do. But creating, for example, system chains, which can support long-term storage, like competing with things like Filecoin and stuff. I think that's in the roadmap. But I think that the most simple idea is to avoid all that together. Like, you know, the simpler application just uses memory.
And think
about how many applications you run or people build, if you're a developer, that you build where you don't write anything to memory or anything to storage at all. You just run it and it just happens in memory and then it closes, right?
Okay, like a calculator.
Exactly,
yeah,
right? But that's the most basic part. And the thing is that with the new Polkadot, you can actually do something that much more simply, right? It's not like you have to build an industrial application. You can actually launch these simple, ephemeral applications. And I think that's powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, look, one surprising aspect of this presentation was the idea, and I kind of got a kick out of it, right? Because of the TPS bullshit metric and stuff. This
is the
transactionless.
Yeah.
So I think that's a little bit funny. I don't know if it's meant to be funny. But
I think it's meant to be honest. I mean, I think it's meant to be a little bit like
a bit cheeky.
Exactly. So I did a presentation here, which was talking about transaction per second. And my main philosophy of the talk was that TPS is a total BS number. It's easily manipulatable. It's gameable. It is being gamed, right?
Sure.
And it's actually, and I made a tweet as well saying that, like, what's the worst thing about all of this is that it actually is influencing what products are being built and where money is going. And that's the worst, because it's like, you know, it's one thing for someone to, like, you know, make a number. It's another thing for a team to actually believe this number is the way that they're going to raise money, right? So that's that. And in my presentation, I said Polkadot's, the relay chain's goal is to have zero TPS. That when we achieve that, we have succeeded. And it's not because, you know, our platform can't support a lot of data throughput, a lot of computation. We're doing a ton of computation for the parachain.
Sure.
It's the fact that, like, if you want to provide the best infrastructure to host applications, you need to move users away from it, right?
Sure.
Users should use the applications, and we should make the relay chain and, I guess, this core chain, the Jam chain, support just and focus on applications, right? And how many times have we heard, you know, various chains out there where users spamming the network are actually causing problems to the service of the chain?
Exactly, yeah.
That's not resilience. You know, that's not unstoppable.
I think research at Web3 actually wants to intentionally do this just to push the chain. They have, like, these glutton parachain ideas where they just want to, like, you know, test the limits.
Yeah, but
and that'll look good on paper.
But at the parachain level, I think. And we want to see, like, what is it, like, the metric we care about is parachains per second or something like that, right? Like, that's it's that kind of number. It's not the transaction, not the users. It's really the computation and, like, the throughput that
it's
we can
the throughput.
Push through.
It's the throughput.
Exactly.
It's data, per second, right?
Exactly.
Okay, cool. So can you just explain to us, though, how is it transactionless? Why do we have transactions on blockchains? Why does that even exist? And why do I not have transactions on my laptop?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about, like, what transaction actually means. I think in this context, transaction is really trying to say, like, some action from the user onto the from a user, like a human.
Yeah.
Or, it doesn't have to be a human. It can be a computer program. It can be whatever. But some kind of, like, account.
From an actor.
Yeah, exactly. An actor onto the blockchain. In this case, like, we are already in the works of trying to create all these system chains, which will move things like governance, treasury, balances, staking to system chains, to parachains, actually take advantage of Polkadot's sharding scaling to actually run itself, right?
Okay, yeah.
And so part of Core Jam's philosophy is, if we can just focus on the protocol level of, like, what it is takes to actually, like, secure and run these parachains, we are already working towards moving all this other human logic off the chain, then there's no reason for there to be even a normal transaction on the relay chain, right?
Okay, so there might still be transactions in the parachain service.
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Of course. But that's the idea, that the Jam chain itself will not be how you move dots.
Gotcha.
Right? It'll be on a application, a Web3 application that is very like, I guess, closely tied to the Jam chain, or like, you know, like it's you know, there's a set of applications that are, which are like anyone can publish, and there's a set of applications which are system applications, right?
Yeah.
And the other pieces, and that's what it means.
Okay. Kind of the model I'm working with right now, and I want to verify it with you.
Okay. The best I can.
So we have the Jam chain, okay, which is going to produce block every 6 seconds, and then that block is going to be the accumulation of services.
Okay.
The first service, parachains being a type of service.
Yes.
This is the idea. It's not like there's going to be like the parachain service and all parachains connect to it.
Right.
It's like parachains are a type of service.
Exactly.
Is this correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, and so the idea there is that when we generalize what this Jam chain can do, like,
yeah.
I think the best way to think about Jam chain, think of it like a multi-threaded processor in the Web3 world, right?
Yeah.
So you have like a single-threaded chain, like Ethereum, like a single-threaded processor back in the day. We have built a multi-threaded processor. One of the things you can run on it is the parachain application, that double-click, open, parachain application. That used to be the only thing you can run.
Hmm.
Now you can run more things. And I expect, and I think Gav has in mind other services that he wants to launch out there, things that are more akin to like a smart contract, things that are more akin to like Accords, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff that will exist as other services, but the kind of assumption model around the parachains is itself a service. And I think we're going to keep that around and make sure that that's available and working well as it works today, you know?
Sure. And in the future, as we keep scaling horizontally, I guess we can keep adding more cores, right? There's no upper bound to that?
No, there is limits to these kinds of things. So,
okay.
I mean, when we talk about cores is a great final tangible representation of something.
Sure, yeah.
But in order to get there, you require validators, you require networking, you require staking. Like, it's a whole set of steps to just get it. So I think there was some kind of ratio, right? So like, let's just assume the current ratio. So
okay.
We have like 50 cores, which is backed by 300 validators on Polkadot, right?
Yeah.
And I think Kusama might have more, like, you get more validators. I'm not sure if it has more cores right now, but that's the kind of idea. So let's, and we want to scale that for sure. But definitely there needs to be some, like, for every core we want, we need some N number of validators, right?
Mm.
To act in the system, right? The limit number of cores will be the complexity of how many validators we can support. And validators, due to the way that they gossip information to each other, usually is an N squared problem, right? So I think our high-level goals for a single chain or a single validator set is to be around 1,000 validators,
yeah.
Right? That's what Kusama's been proving the whole time.
Yeah.
But then we also have methods for potentially having sets of validators up to 10,000 and then splitting them into subsets of 1,000 that they can all, you know, secure different parts of the network or something like that, right?
Okay.
But there are limits. So I would say, you know, I think Gav is thinking approximately 350 cores, probably secured by around 1,000 validators as a starting point.
Okay, gotcha.
But I would not say it's infinite, you know?
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. So what part of the architecture here is responsible for sequencing all these services into a block?
Sure. So there's a new entity in this model of CoreGem.
Okay.
And I think the current term, I think he wrote down, is it a change? The worker program builder? Service builder? Let's use your word. We had a conversation in DM about this,
and
I like that you use this word, universal sequencer.
Yeah,
okay? I think it really makes a lot of sense.
Sure, sure.
But there's a new entity in the Polkadot ecosystem.
Yeah.
It's called universal sequencers. And their goal is to look at all the possible like applications that want to use the cores of Polkadot.
Yeah.
And to basically construct like execution packages that will be deployed to a core.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
And it's their kind of responsibility, as I understand, to basically make money in the middle. So like they just like sequencers today,
yeah.
Their goal is to basically find the most valuable or most worthwhile package of stuff. Then they will go ahead and buy the execution core. They will post any data needed to the data availability layer.
Okay.
And then they will execute that block. And ideally, when they execute the block, that they will have earned a reward for their services, right? They can get the fees from the block, or they can get, you know, middlemen transaction fees from the execution, like all that kind of stuff, right?
Sure, sure.
But basically the idea is that you have these universal sequencers providing these work packages to the cores, right? Now, what does this enable? This enables a lot of things. So we already had this idea of sequencers. That's what collators do.
Right.
But collators only provide one application, right? Only can basically say, hey, here's a package for my one application.
Yeah.
With the idea of these more general sequencers, these universal sequencers, you can go in two extremes. In one extreme, you can have a sequencer managing multiple applications, which can all fit in one core and execute all that at once, right?
Yeah.
So using a single core, I can run 3, 4, 5 small parachains, applications, blockchains, whatever the idea is, those services, right? So it's not just limited to one application per core, it's many, right? And the sequencer is the one that has context of how much resources each one needs. This block will all fit, the core can run it, right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
their responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
On the other extreme, you now have a sequencer that can say, hey, actually, I want to use 100 cores. I want to use all 300 cores.
Okay.
So I can run a blockchain where, if assuming each core does, you know, very conservatively speaking, 1,000 transactions per second, I want to run a blockchain or I want to run some application that does 300,000 transactions per second. If I have a sequencer that is fast enough to build that block,
yeah,
break it up into chunks, and then send it to Polkadot,
yeah,
it could saturate all 300 cores
Ooh.
With this single application.
Okay.
And we can finalize it. And
okay.
I'll give you, again, a very back of the napkin explanation of how that might work.
Yeah.
Imagine again, I have a very powerful computer. I build this extreme, the super block. I then mix 300 snapshots. I break down that super block into pieces that would each fit on a core.
Yeah.
Each snapshot starts with a starting hash or a starting commitment and a final commitment. So, and they're represented by hashes. I run all of them on the cores separately, right? And then all I have to do at the end is check. Is every single core, did it end where the other one started?
Hmm.
And if so, I can zip all of the things together and then we've basically secured a block, a super block, right?
That's crazy. I mean, does this
does
introduce... It does make sense. But does this introduce a situation where... like higher, more expensive compute wins and gets to determine what the jam chain is made out of?
No, I mean, it's all economics. Like, we are providing, like, with any kind of, like, you know, decentralized system,
yeah.
we are providing a service.
Mm-hmm.
That service, using only the DOT token,
yeah.
you'll get access to that service,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right, right.
And at that point, it's economics. Who wants to use that? Who is willing to pay for and
sure.
use that service? We have, you know, core time auctions, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I assume there'll be many, many flexible ways to access this block space, right?
Gotcha,
we were even
yeah.
talking, and one of the presentations, I think, either from Gav or from Pierre, I don't remember, was talking about, you know, like, in our ecosystem, we can create these core time, like, vouchers, where basically, like,
yeah.
if you go to a hackathon, you win something, here's some core time you can just get access to. Just like AWS provides for all of their, like, kind of,
sure,
like, you know,
yeah.
builders, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It won't be that any one person wins. It'll be that, you know, what applications make sense. Now, a chain running 300,000 transactions per second, but has no value or bearing, is probably not going to be able to get access to that resource. It'll
right.
be...
It'll run out of resources,
yeah.
even if it has it to start. Like, if it's a useless non-business...
It's not doing anything, right?
Right, right,
but a blockchain, which is providing extremely good financial services, running
sure.
at 300, even up to 1 million transactions per second,
yeah.
that's a lot of value. And of
yeah.
course, they can saturate that block space, right?
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And again, transactions in the service, not on the core jam itself.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly.
Jam chain itself.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So I think it's super exciting. And,
cool,
you know,
cool.
The again, going back to this, it's not a revolution. It's an evolution. We already have cores. We already have all these cores running on Polkadot. We already
mm-hmm.
have this idea of execution. It's very general. The evolution is just having code which handles all of this range of flexibility. We had just one thing in the middle.
Yep.
Now you can go to the left and you can go to the right.
How has your perception, your model of the PVM evolved since we spoke
sure.
last month? And the RISC-V
architecture, yeah.
yeah.
To be honest, I mean, this is really a Sergey question to get a solid answer. From someone who's not very technical in this aspect of Polkadot, what I can say is this, that one of the ultimate requirements you need to build this kind of general computer is you need to agree on a compute language to speak.
Yeah.
That is what WASM and RISC-V are attempting to do. They are like
yeah.
these like low-level, you know, binary formats, which if we can build a machine which can understand it, then we can run it. And the idea is that these are general languages so that, you know, if you want to write your program in Python, in Rust, in Go, or whatever, you compile to this format and then we can run it, right? That's,
yeah.
that's the main idea. And this is actually true for computers today. I don't know, again, people who are watching this, how much you know about the computer stuff, but like, you know, when I run on a like a Mac M1 computer, it's using ARM. When I run on a Intel CPU, it's using x86. Like, these are different kinds of formats. So the program you run, that's why you can't run programs, the same programs on Windows and Mac, right? Some games that aren't supported on Mac because they only support x86. So we are basically saying, hey, you know, we are supporting RISC-V, this format. You can compile to us very easily, and then you can run it on our decentralized computer, right?
Yeah.
Wasm and RISC-V were both options at the time, like way back in the day of Polkadot.
Sure.
But at the time, you know, I think Wasm was thought to have the right properties that we would want here.
Yeah.
I think what we're realizing is, you know, like once you actually build something, like you can hypothesize what the best or theorize what the best thing is.
Yeah.
But when you actually use it and go out there, there's all these things you learn about reality. I think what we're seeing, and we only learned about this recently, is that using RISC-V, using the Polkadot VM, that RISC-V is actually really, really great at doing what we want. It has the ability to have gas metering. It has the ability to execute very fast. And we haven't even optimized it. And it's already meeting the speeds of what we've done with Wasm over the last 5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, one of the nice things is like RISC-V is a very small set of like operations. It's a very simple language.
Yeah.
And it seems to be one that's picking up. Like, I mean, if you even look inside of the other ecosystems in the blockchain, they're using RISC-V to build things like RISC-0, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like a zero knowledge layer. So it is a technology that's very exciting. And we've shown that it fits very well here. And I think in terms of one of the other goals of CoreJam was to create a minimal specification for what this jam chain will do.
Mm-hmm.
RISC-V itself being simple also simplifies what the jam chain will be, right?
Did you interpret what Gav was saying? I thought he said we'll have multiple implementation, so a Rust implementation and maybe some other ones as well at launch.
Yeah, I think parity is going to be Rust only. So let's talk about the vision. So one of the realizations, one of the evolutions, right, of Polkadot is the realization that we mix together an application SDK, which is Substrate, with a core like relay chain product.
That's how it is right now.
That is how it is right now. Yeah. And this was a mistake.
Yes.
At least this is, you know, I think we're saying that we realize now this is a mistake. And the reason why is that because we built the relay chain using the Substrate SDK,
mm-hmm.
that it becomes extremely hard for other languages to build working relay chain without basically rebuilding Substrate.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Substrate itself is, you know, it's like most of it is not meant for the relay chain. Most of it is meant for building parachains and applications, right?
Yeah.
And so in this context, it just makes the job very, very difficult. And so one of the philosophies, the reason why there's the one big radical shift, the big bang moment of moving to a jam chain, is that we want to rewrite with our current knowledge of how to build a heterogeneous sharded network with all the knowledge of what we want to achieve with like extreme flexibility of cores, a minimal specification for exactly how the technology should work,
mm-hmm.
such that anyone can take this paper, implement it in their favorite language, and be able to sync that chain the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is one of the things that made Ethereum so powerful. I mean, Gav, I think the major thing he did beyond the first implementation for the Ethereum chain was writing the yellow paper. And the yellow paper defined how other teams, completely independent of Parity or I guess the Ethereum Foundation at the time, could go and actually implement a working Ethereum node. And so with this philosophy in mind, with minimizing the jam chain, we are able to basically support that.
Well, this is, I think, one of the most exciting things about the presentation was this idea of PVM being replicable, right? You could now spin up another PVM chain, you know, just like we have other EVM chains today, and they all speak the same language. They're all compatible in a way, even though they're running on different validator sets.
Okay.
I think the same thing can happen with PVM here.
Well, I'll push there. What is a PVM chain to you? Like, what is like a Polkadot VM chain?
PVM to me is like a simple low-level kernel seed for building blocks on a blockchain.
I don't think there'll be many PVM chains. I think that PVM will be the language that the jam chain speaks.
Yeah, yeah.
There could be smart contract applications like that use you know, RISC-V directly. There could be parachains or like whatever they're, you know, the new version of, you know, these Web3 apps that will host a bunch of PVM contracts or even Wasm contracts or whatever you can imagine, right?
Sure.
So, you know, I don't think like PVM chain doesn't necessarily resonate with me, at least in that context.
Okay, okay, interesting.
That makes sense, what I'm saying?
It does, yeah. No, fair enough. Yeah, I was drawing kind of direct parallel between an EVM and a PVM. Like, this is a more capable execution environment.
Yes.
But also simpler and replicable. I think he used the word replicable in his speech.
But I hope you're not hoping that there'll be more jam chains.
I'm not hoping that. I just said there could be.
It could be, of course.
You know
this
what
is
I
all
mean?
Open source code.
Like the Ethereum Foundation, I don't think they're hoping there's more EVM chains. But
Yeah, it happens. It happens. You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. You're right.
Dang, okay.
No, so I agree with you then.
Okay, yeah. Fine. Ink.
Yeah.
At least by parody. Parody's not gonna build ink anymore. I think that's the message. It's not that ink doesn't exist anymore.
So talk about it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think ink is awesome. By the way, ink. Ooh. So you know, I was working a lot on DevEx for building palettes, and ink was a huge influence in improving the way that we're actually able to do DevEx in application development, right?
Okay.
That being said, I think there are a number of factors which we learned in the development of ink that made it maybe not the best language for smart contracts in blockchains.
Hmm.
One is adoption, right? So I think if you speak to anyone, no one's saying Solidity is the best or the EVM is the best. Like, there's so many weird things about it. But the fact that it was the first and it has like a 9-year head start on everyone else is unignorable, right?
Yeah.
It also happened that because the EVM is so simple compared to things like Wasm, that it actually does a really good job at making predictable bytecode, and that allows us to keep it small, to Merkleize it, to do all these kinds of fancy tricks in crypto that Wasm right now isn't really ready for. And Wasm wasn't designed to do, right? Beyond that, I think that one of the comments that Gav directly said, I think he said this at the Parachain Summit, was that in order for us to really push forward a new product like Ink and say, this is the place you want to be, there probably needs to be at least a 10x improvement, right? There needs to be at least some kind of like, you know, I think this is a common across all technologies, that if you want to beat the incumbent, you need to be at least 10x better than the incumbent at your job. Not just a little bit better, right?
Okay.
And I don't think today that from a performance standpoint, which is, I think, the key factor that people care about,
right,
that in contracts are 10x better than the Solidity counterparts, right?
That's right, yeah.
I think saying that ink is dead is like a newspaper front page thing. But the reality of the situation is that ink has a great team, a really great team. Honestly, smart guys that are building. I would believe, actually, that they are more getting decentralized than anything else. That there probably will still be plenty of projects to work on in ink. Probably a lot of people who are still interested in developing it, a lot that we can learn from it, and that I think that they should continue to get funded to explore that. Now, are they a key pillar of Polkadot's future as supporting smart contracts?
Yeah.
Probably not, right? I think that we're realizing that if a smart contract was going to live on the Jam chain, that it might be better as a RISC-V application or something else, right?
Sure.
But I think absolutely Ink has a lot of value still to come, right? And being able to build contracts in Rust compiled to Wasm, like, that is very powerful. And I think Ink actually is one of the best players in the game for that.
Beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to teams that are currently building what they think are parachains, sailing off into the future? So we talked in the beginning of this conversation, there's other iterations coming, CoreJam, Elastic Scaling, but how would you advise a team building today to prepare and be part of this better future?
Exactly. You should be aware of where we're going, but not let it affect you too much in the short term. I think that one, as Gav mentioned himself, this kind of technology is 18, 20 months away. And, those numbers, they always fluctuate depending on, the world, right?
A lot of uncertainty.
Polkadot, in terms of what it provides for parachains and like what Parachain V1 is doing, is great. And Azure Core Time is coming very soon. What we can do with existing Polkadot is great. You do not need to wait for new Polkadot to build amazing technologies and amazing applications and provide amazing services, right?
Sure.
Continue to build. If anything, I would say this. Teams shouldn't replan. They shouldn't find a new target. They should open up their target. Think about the same things you want to build, same applications, but now understand that you have more flexibility, more agility, more ability to go ahead and build your Web3 applications. Like, a team may have before been limited in thinking to say, hey, I can only support 2 seconds of execution time for a block, right? Now we're saying you can support 2 seconds of execution time times 300, right? This super chain kind of idea, right?
Sure.
At the same time, someone might say, hey, I have an application, but it doesn't really make sense because I have to make a block every 6 seconds and I only need it once a day. With our flexible core time and the ideas of Jam, chain, that's fine too, right? You might say, hey, actually, I don't want to run parachains. I don't want to host collated all that kind of stuff. Well, now with these ephemeral things, these smart contracts on the Jam chain, You can do that too, right? Like, it's nothing has changed. And I think that you will continue to see Substrate and the Polkadot SDK to be the place that you and the technology you use to build those applications. I just think you're going to have much more flexibility in what you can design. So for these teams, keep building,
right?
Keep innovating,
right?
Expand the potential in your mind of what you can build, right?
Right.
Think about how you can take advantage of these technologies when they're ready, but know that probably what you need in the short term is to bring in users and get that short term adoption.
Yeah.
And then get to a point where you actually need these features to continue to scale even further, right?
So awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Focus on building a real business, right? And
exactly.
Don't worry too much, because I think it appears that this big bang, what's going to happen is block production stops, then new block production picks back up a second later, maybe.
So
and everything keeps on rolling. This is what I understand.
Listen, from a technical standpoint, but also someone who's been working in the space for a long time,
yeah,
I am most bullish on a regenesis.
Cool.
A regenesis is going to allow us to clean up so much code. So one of the problems when you're building a blockchain is,
yeah,
as soon as you start the chain, every decision you make is a permanent record of that chain, right?
Yes.
That means that every single change to our database format, every single time there was a hiccup in the chain, like whatever you can imagine,
yeah,
we have to have some code in our code base which says, okay, on this block, change to this format. On this block, do this, like these things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A regenesis allows us to keep all of the history of Polkadot, all the stuff, but get rid of all of the legacy debt. And we can make a lot of improvements. And there's so many things that we've been waiting for something like this, an event like this, mm-hmm, to be able to do to actually improve our chain and get rid of, basically make it so that we can forget the past, but leave the past behind, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Nice. And once we do start this new chain, as we've been talking about, we have this parachain service. You kind of alluded to an ephemeral smart contract. I guess that could be another class of services.
Exactly. I mean, I think that class of service is exactly the kind of thing that the Jam chain will have in mind.
Yeah, that's right.
This is the evolution that we realize that parachains are not the only kinds of service people want to run.
Yeah.
There are a wide range of services that people want to run. Parachains is just one of them, right?
What do you think about a service like taking a roll-up that's currently connected to Ethereum and plugging it into Polkadot? Would that be possible?
Absolutely. And I think you'll actually find it to be a lot cheaper on Polkadot too, because
that's right,
Polkadot is actually designed to support these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, in many ways, all we're building in Polkadot is roll-ups, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just we used terminology before roll-ups were a thing. Like, roll-ups are the common nomenclature because that's what Ethereum used.
That's right.
We were
right.
talking about roll-ups back when we were building heterogeneous sharded parachains.
Uh-huh.
That was exactly what a parachain comes from. It comes from a parallelized chain. That is exactly what rollups are. You know?
Okay, well, we're going to lead the way on the nomenclature this time, okay?
Exactly.
We're
going to
sit down
so.
And figure it out this
yeah.
time, yeah.
I wanted to add something about Dot Token, too. So, there's a new chain, but Dot isn't going anywhere.
I mean,
the Jam chain will run on and live on Dot.
And
again, one of the most important things for me when I evaluate other projects out there, and when you evaluate tokens in general, what utility and value does it bring, right? A lot of tokens out there, let's be honest, it's just speculation. There's no value there. There's no utility there.
Yeah.
If you believe that accessing a Web3 VM, a Web3 computer, is valuable, and I think it is. I think if you talk to anyone trying to launch a blockchain, you realize how valuable it is to access secure, flexible block space.
Yeah.
If you think that that's valuable, and you believe in how Polkadot is designing and scaling the system, you should know the only way to access our block space is with a Dot token.
Yeah.
And that is intrinsic value.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And it's again, I'm not saying, Dot token to the moon or whatever like that. I'm saying that it is up to our world to understand how much they want to access block space and know that they have to deal with our economy if they want to access it, right?
Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
Speaking of token price, one area that, I do want Dot to go to the moon is in regards to the treasury.
We want
to have a well-funded treasury.
Yeah.
I do have some concerns. Maybe they're unfounded, but with the extinction of the auction model, I'm not sure what's going to happen to all this Dot.
Sure. Okay, so great. A few things I want to talk about with the auction model.
Sure.
One, I want to talk about crowd loans, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
can
I would love
that?
To, yeah.
So one of the comments I heard from some of the people raising their hand in Sub-Zero was that they were a little bit disappointed that crowd loans on the Relay chain are going away, right?
Yeah, yeah.
and that the crowd loans were actually a really nice model for getting initial funding and seeding for these teams.
Yeah.
I want to tell you that crowd loans aren't going anywhere. Crowd loans, the palette, the very rigid, specific rules, you do it this way palette, is going away. There, you can build crowd loans on any Parachain right now. You can,
of course you could.
You can build a smart contract. You can build your own palette. You can even, you know, take the palette we have right now, add it to your chain. Like, there's no reason crowd loans need to go anywhere. And in fact, it should be that probably one of these Parachain teams, if they want to add a feature to their list of features, like,
yeah,
especially if you're like in the DeFi space, you should try to be the new hub for crowd loans. Why not, right? Like, you can be the one who's managing that and helping navigate. And you can purchase block space using XCM. It's not going anywhere. Polkadot just doesn't need it anymore because Polkadot needed the crowd loan palette to seed the initial parachains from existing.
Oh, okay,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So at this point, we have parachains working. You can build your own crowd loan. So I hope that you'll do that.
You know what I would do is I would loan my DOT to be staked, and staking rewards could buy core time. Like lock it into a stake or something like that. That could be a system.
You could design a million systems, right?
Yeah, again, and then get tokens in return.
There is a call to make, like, buy core time.
Yeah.
And all of the, you know, rigmarole to get to that point is up to you as a developer, right? You write whatever code you like.
Yeah.
Next is auctions, right? So you're talking about, well, a part of the model for Polkadot's economics was that we suspected that we wanted around, so we want 50% of tokens locked in staking.
Yeah.
20% of tokens locked in crowd loans and slots.
Yeah.
And the other 30% to be like liquid or used in other aspects, right?
Yeah.
And of course, there's some overlap here. For example, if you stake, you can also use those same tokens for governance, right? So it's not like we're only saying 30% for governance. There's a huge chunk of them can be used for governance, all that kind of stuff. But that's what's going to happen to that 20%, which was going to be locked up, right? Well, I think one aspect of the core time stuff is that we're actually burning DOTs, right?
Yeah,
that
DOT
is no longer this kind of like unkillable resource. As people use core time, we'll be burning it, and that'll be a deflationary pressure on the DOT. So in some way, that, you know, 20% that was locked is now becoming 20% that's going to get burnt all the time, right? Beyond that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that now we are basically unlocking even more DOT to be reused in other parts of the ecosystem to have different ways of using accessing the value behind it. And again, I think that the Agile Core Time product and Polkadot product itself is so kind of exciting that that 20% of tokens will just be used like immediately. It won't be like locked up from 50 applications or 100 applications. It'll be distributed to 1,000, 10,000 applications and all accessing, you know, core time and application space and block space on Polkadot.
Good stuff. You know, I'm kind of wondering where the rules of the Polkadot economy or of the DOT token are going to fall in this new generation.
Like how we're going to define the new set of...
I wonder if we're still going to have authority to adjust the parameters of inflation or whatnot, or if that is going to be part of the rigid, unchangeable structure of the kernel side.
Right. So there is some hint towards this, right? Gav mentioned in his talk that because the core jam chain is going to be harder to upgrade, require a hard fork, that some aspects of the economics might be enshrined on that chain, right?
That's it, yeah, yeah.
Shit, man, I don't know.
It might not be bad, you know, like, might be a more stable place to invest your time and energy in, right? If you know that there's some limit.
Let me speak about my philosophy on this.
Yeah.
And I do not want to claim to be anyone who has any influence on DOT economics, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But let me just give them my thing. The DOT token is not meant to be a store of value. It's not meant to be a long-term investment. It's not meant to be like what you Bitcoin hold and forget. It's not a digital gold. It's not a currency. It is a token which accesses a resource.
Mm.
The question we want to ask ourselves is, we want to create a token economy, a set of economics around the token, which optimizes application developers to be able to access that block space, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If it's too cheap, then we have too much people flooding the market, and basically you never get your real application working because everyone else is, you know, accessing block space and, you know, it's like, and doing their meme coins, and it's not bringing value, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same problem we have with Ethereum and all those scaling solutions. We need something.
Sure.
If DOT becomes this thing where, you know, it deflates, and only 5 people in the world have it, then what kind of platform is that? It's not accessible to anyone.
Of course.
So having a strictly deflationary token doesn't really make a lot of sense to me in terms of expanding access to this Web3 application.
Yeah, yeah.
But certainly having, you know, deflationary pressures,
yeah,
which are a result of using the token,
yeah,
that makes a lot of sense in terms of ensuring that that resource is scarce enough,
yeah,
that we are able to identify the right kinds of applications to use our resource, to use the block space, right?
Yeah, we actually want kind of a stable asset here.
And in many ways, this is what the auctions tried to, and I think did achieve. Like, you know, one model of distributing a token is just airdrop to everyone, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very spammy nature. I mean, of course, it's very hot for all these guys. Oh, you know, like, this is the next airdrop token. Buy this token, do no work, and get a million airdrops.
Yeah.
But it's totally useless. It's totally no signal, because every one of these chains are basically useless. You have no idea what the quality or value of this team is, anything like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What the crowd loan and auction system tried to do was, we have this limited resource. Battle. Prove yourself to the community that you are the most important resource to get access to this thing.
Yeah.
Collect the funds from the community. And for the community, for actually having to choose which auctions or which crowd loans to support, they are using their human knowledge to bring information to the blockchain and say, this is the application to go to. So in this context, getting the crowd loan rewards was a real reward for work done.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so in this context, I think the deflationary pressure, the economics here is you saying, hey, you can't just take some DOT token, get some block space, then say, oh, I did some dumb thing, get my token back and walk away.
Yeah, yeah.
That if you're going to access the block space, you're burning that token. So you need to know that you're willing to spend the money to do that, to do some action, right?
Yeah.
And that is the right kind of economics for finding great applications and while not limiting, you know, application access.
Beautiful. Look, I want to pivot a little bit here.
Sure.
I mean, that was a fruitful conversation, and I thank you so much for coming on and sharing these ideas with us.
Yeah.
But I did want to ask you before we go, how do you think governance is going?
Oh, man. It certainly is fun. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
oh yeah.
one of my guilty pleasures, I watch on the Netflix show, the F1 series.
Okay.
Where they take all the drama from the F1 racing
and
they turn it into a series. I mean, we should make a Netflix, like you and me, we make a Netflix series, all the drama around governance.
Yeah.
My philosophy is this. Navigating Polkadot governance is not for the faint of heart.
Oh yeah.
It is not meant to be easy.
Nope.
I mean, without resources like you, I probably wouldn't even know half of what's going on. I'm watching your show all the time to get the latest news.
Sure,
and you guys
yeah.
do, I mean, you guys are an angel
we
in our space.
We do the show to get the latest news. You know what I mean?
Yeah, literally. Like, yeah. yeah. You're like, I'm going to be researching for an hour anyway. Might as well put it on video, right?
That's right.
You guys are angel. but I honestly do believe at the high level that governance has made good decisions.
Yeah.
And I think at a higher quality than the council. I was
yeah.
part of the council.
Yes,
I mean,
yeah.
I was making a lot of decisions, but you know, I think that governance and the kind of like keyboard warriors have really found have really made it hard for grifters to get access.
Yeah.
That being said, I think that there's a lot that can be improved in terms of not the protocol level governance. I think protocol level governance is actually quite tuned well. We have
I
these
agree.
Different tracks. We have these different systems. A simple vote decides it.
Yeah.
What we're missing is all of this meta protocol, like things that Polkadot doesn't need to enshrine in the code,
no.
but that we as a society,
the social
as a
agreements,
group,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
So, for example, I would love to see a Web2 application which can be verified, but is using, you know, like in Web2 resources to be high performance, that identifies different entities that are asking for money. That if you're coming in and asking money for the first time, the UI says, I'm sorry, you can't ask for $1 million because this is the first time you're talking to us.
Yeah.
I don't know who you are, right?
Yeah.
Please ask for $10,000, right?
Exactly,
and show
yeah.
me what you can do in 1 week, 1 month, whatever.
Yeah.
And once you've reached that milestone and it's been successful, you've unlocked the $50,000 tier.
Yeah.
And then you've unlocked the $100,000 tier.
Yes.
$1 million tier.
Yeah.
Like this. Now, again, it's not Polkadot saying you can't ask for $10,000 because in the background, you could.
Yeah.
But a socially accepted UI goes through. And if you come in and you see $1 million proposal, I go to this website, I see, hey, they have no profile, and then maybe there's a warning flag. They use some other platform or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a warning flag.
Yeah.
Hey, I maybe shouldn't support them. Why haven't you followed this path, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation came to us obviously they have some social reputation.
Right,
like, same other nonprofits,
sure,
you know,
sure,
Red Cross, whatever. That's different.
Yeah.
But if you are, you know,
from corporate America, and you were a hotshot there, and now you want to come over here and
exactly,
do something hotshot.
Show us that you can actually. Show us that you are working in the system, that you understand, that you're engaged with our community, that you're actually building things like that. So,
sure.
I think governance is right. I think we're just missing some tools, high level tools.
What did you think of the opening of the DV experiment, the decentralized voices experiment?
The DV voices I know, I like them a lot.
Yeah,
I think that they're smart. They're in the space. I think there is a right. There's a good, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a mixture of ideas and stuff. Like it's not solo-minded.
Yeah, it's like diverse opinions.
I also think the introduction of more DOT tokens regularly into the voting system is great.
Yeah, me too.
That being said, I think that I'm less excited about like the foundation giving their tokens out and more excited about individual DOT holders giving, you know, grouping their tokens together and giving it up. So like what we see with the DV is like we have a big chunk of tokens being split among community.
Yeah.
What I really want to see is the community itself collecting their tokens together and having a voice.
Because,
you know,
right,
that really is where the... how do we say it? Like that's where we're really going to get community alignment, right? Because these eight voices, or however many there are, is it six?
Seven, I think.
Okay, so these seven voices,
or six, maybe. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead. Okay.
These six or seven voices.
Yeah.
These voices, they are they will have great ideas. They will be able to identify some good direction stuff, but they also become truthfully a target. They become a target of manipulation. They become a target of how do I appeal to them and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, I mean, there's a lot, and I think it's valid.
Yeah.
I think what we really want to see, what we want to show, is that if we can identify good leaders, and they can help steward kind of the thinking process of the treasury, that it works. That's great.
Yeah.
And then that might encourage again more of the smaller guys to back their or find their own voices through certain community leaders and then do the same thing.
Yeah, that's right. That would be a good outcome of it for sure.
Yeah, so maybe this is the way I would say it.
Yeah.
The DV is a cool experiment where you have someone who has high investment in Polkadot from a time perspective, from how much they believe perspective, but maybe they're not the whale that they need to be. Can they help bring value to the network?
Yeah.
And if so, that should encourage small holders to find their own leaders in the space to do the same thing. I think that this is the way to get things done for the decentralized future. Like this is a truly resilient, unstoppable, open platform for everyone, right?
I know, yeah.
I'm so excited that this is like, you know, this, I mean, if we think about the history of the world, these different governance systems, how long they've been around. We are in the first years of this even being, you know, thought about and implemented. We are very far from the final solution.
Yeah.
But what we have now is a great kind of journey into what can be done. I think there's many more primitives that we want to include, things like proof of personhood, identity, right? Privacy layers.
Yeah, that's big.
Many things, right? Quadratic voting, all of these kinds of things that will continue to provide different access points. And I think the most important thing is that there's not one governance solution for all problems. I think that what we actually are going to have are many flavors of governance, which will be applied to different societies and different kinds of
different missions.
Questions and missions. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that Polkadot, you know, it instilled in the core values is experimenting in this area. And yeah, I mean, I'm excited to continue to follow it and hope that it'll improve naturally.
It's a great journey. Thanks for being on this journey with us.
Of course, yeah.
Let's catch up in a little bit and touch base and see where we're at in a few months.
Yeah, thanks so much.
But real honor to have you on the show.
Great.
And you giving your time to us, we appreciate it so much.
I mean, you give... the time that you give to us and the whole community, I'm not giving you enough, honestly. So,
oh, please. No,
anytime.
Yeah. Okay, buddy.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.